Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. Doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing great, Justin. How are you?
I am good. We just saw a movie, Us.
We were looking forward to watching that movie because we enjoyed Get Out so much.
Yeah. Didn't know what to expect because the trailer for Us happens to be one of the better trailers I've ever seen because it doesn't tell you anything about the movie, unlike other trailers that literally show you the entire movie. So I don't see a lot of movies anymore because I already saw them through the trailer. But Us, you don't know what's happening in that movie from the trailer. I was pleasantly surprised and my expectations were blown away.
It has a whole different feel than other horror films I've seen. You know, like one thing that I would compare it to is The Shining. Not because they're similar films, but when you're watching The Shining, you know you're watching something unique, and that's how Us felt. I also thought it had really good acting in it, especially from the lead. She's amazing in it. She was also in Black Panther.
My thoughts on the film, without giving away too many spoilers or anything, is it obviously is more than just a movie about a family being attacked, and it's a little heavy-handed on the whole how the other half lives, or how a privileged class doesn't even acknowledge or appreciate what they have. I think that's my biggest takeaway from the movie. Appreciate what you have because there are others that are striving or unable to obtain what you have.
Speaking of horror, I like to listen to horror podcasts now and again, but I'd never really found one I stuck with. I found this one podcast, Scream Girls podcast. I think it's very funny, and I think they have great insight into horror films. So if you're into horror films, you should check out Scream Girls podcast. CrimeCon. Some of you are dragging your feet, but the good news is you can save 10% if you use the Generation Y code.
Gen Y19.
So please go out, register, get your friends to register. You'll want to hang out with Justin and I. Get your tickets, and we'll see you in New Orleans, June 7th through the 9th.
Stitcher Premium. You can go listen to our back catalog and new episodes of the show, all completely ad-free. In addition to ad-free episodes, you can also listen to tons of other ad-free Wondery shows. With Stitcher Premium, you get access to hundreds of hours of original content, audio documentaries, and exclusive bonus episodes from some of your other favorite podcasts. You can sign up now for a free month at Stitcher Premium by going to stitcherpremium.com/Wondery and using the promo code Wondery. Once you're signed up, just download the Stitcher app for iOS or Android and start listening. That's stitcherpremium.com/Wondery and promo code Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is your last chance to save 65% on a full year of BODi. I'm Carl, co-founder of BODi. That's B-O-D-I. And I want to help you lean into your decision to start working out and eating better. Right now, if you sign up for a one-year subscription to BODi, I'll give you 65% off. Look, I know it's not easy to get fit and lose weight, especially if you're trying to figure it out by yourself. But we make it simple. Just follow a program for 20 to 30 minutes day by day and lose 5 to 10 pounds a month. We have over 120 programs that have been tested and proven to work, and almost 300,000 five-star reviews in the App Store to prove it. BODi also has complete eating plans and thousands of healthy, delicious recipes. So stop guessing and start seeing results with BODi. And let me give you 65% off right now so you save big on the app that CNN underscored named Best Fitness App. But the sale ends this week, so don't wait. Sign up for a year of BODi and save 65%. Just go to BODi.com. That's B-O-D-I with an I.com.
Tonight's case is another whodunit. Much like our Kine case, we have two suspects. I won't say flip a coin, but you should analyze the evidence and weigh it out and make a educated decision on who you think committed the murder. So with that, what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about the murder of Catherine Woods, who was a 21-year-old in New York, who was murdered by either her roommate, ex-boyfriend, or another ex-boyfriend.
So Catherine wasn't from New York. She moved there. Is that correct?
She grew up in Ohio, as did her ex-boyfriend, David Hahn, who was her roommate at the time. We'll talk more about him in a bit. Her dad was John Woods. He was the director of the marching band at Ohio State University. He had actually hoped that she would follow him into a career of music, but she chose dancing. She had been dancing since she was three, and it was really her passion. Her mother was Donna, and she also had a sister named Victoria. She made that move from Columbus, Ohio to New York City in 2002, and it was really to pursue a career in the theater. She really wanted to dance. She really wanted to perform. She was 17 years old at the time, and her parents really weren't into her moving, but they were very supportive of her. And despite the reservations, they drove her to New York.
So this is early 2000s. She's obviously an overachiever as she's moving out and going to New York at 17. But New York is expensive. Everyone that lives there knows what the average price of an apartment goes for, and it's insane. So she has to hustle to make this work, including the support of her parents and everything else. It's not easy to just move to New York. You don't just move to New York. So her parents were rightfully so nervous about this.
She ended up moving into an apartment on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. Now, she would travel back and forth between New York and Columbus, and it was on one of her visits back in Ohio where she ended up meeting a man by the name of David Hahn. He was 20 years old at the time, you know, a few years older than she was.
He was an aspiring rap artist selling his CDs in parking lots. I mean, hey, you got to start somewhere, right?
It was 2 months after their meeting that he ended up moving out to New York and moving in with her. And early on, she had told her parents how excited she was because she really liked David. He was willing to, you know, according to her, drop everything for her.
According to him, he really looked up to her. He almost idolized her and obviously fell in love with her. But he moves in and the New York lifestyle sometimes can get the best of you. He's struggling to pay the bills. And, you know, they have their issues financially.
They also had an on-again, off-again relationship where they would break up and sometimes he would move out, sometimes just days at a time, but then he would come back in. She would take him back in, really. I think at the heart of that, from what I understand, was while she cared a lot about him, she got tired of taking care of him. He wasn't really helping to make ends meet, in other words. Now, as far as her career goes, she was teaching dance and she was continuing to audition, yet she was finding herself running real short of money. She made a decision to start working as an exotic dancer, which of course she did not share with her parents.
And I bet being an exotic dancer paid all of her bills and paid a lot more than teaching and everything else. So I understand her decision to do this.
Yeah, I think that's why we hear so often that there are starving artists. It's just that you're doing something you love, but you're not doing it for financial reasons, and it shows.
And she's a dancer, so I think this is actually a decent fit for her, you know? But while this is happening, she meets another man named Paul Cortez, and he grew up in the Bronx from a divorced mother. He was a very bright kid. He had a lot of scholarships, and he went to an elite Buckley school and Poly Prep school. He graduated from Boston University with a bachelor's degree in theater, so he has some common interests with Catherine. He had aspirations to be a rock star. He played guitar in a Led Zeppelin-inspired band called Monolith. He worked as a personal trainer, a yoga instructor. This was all in the same neighborhood as Catherine. So Paul lived on the east side. He lived on East 106th Street. When Catherine met him, it was at the health club that he worked at in August of 2004. And they started dating 2 or 3 months later.
So just to be clear, she met and dated David first and then met and dated Paul later.
Like her choice of job, she didn't tell her family about a lot of her boyfriends either. No one knows that she's dating Paul. And even David and Paul kind of don't know about each other or the full extent of the relationships happening between them.
It's in early 2005 when Catherine Woods thought that she may have been drugged and raped while she was working at one of these exotic dancing clubs. Because of that, Paul begged her. He said, please quit doing this. Quit being an exotic dancer. But she didn't want to. And I think the feeling I got was that she really needed this for the money. And she wasn't going to let anyone tell her what she was going to be doing with herself. It's her life.
In April 2005, Paul will end up calling her father. And he tells them about Catherine's job, what she's doing. He also paints a pretty bad picture, saying she's addicted to drugs and she's a sex worker. All of these different allegations to, I guess, scare her father into calling and talking to her and essentially talk her out of being an exotic dancer, I guess. So her father, John, immediately flies to New York. He finds Catherine and she's doing just fine. She doesn't appear to be strung out on drugs, and by all accounts, she isn't selling herself or anything else. She tells her father that none of this is true and don't listen to Paul. He's just overbearing and stressing, and her father believes her. She's pissed at Paul now because what kind of person goes over your head, calls your parents, freaks them out to the point where they fly out to see you? So at that point, Catherine, she essentially breaks it off with Paul or distances herself from him.
The date in question, this is the date of the murder, November 17th, 2005. David and Catherine returned to the apartment about 5 o'clock. They had been out walking the dog, and Catherine remained in the apartment. She was going to call a friend while David left with the dog to go get some takeout, and then he would return back to the apartment. Now, Catherine had a friend, Megan Wilkins. She said that their call ended about 6:10 p.m. At 6:18 p.m., Catherine's upstairs neighbor, his name is Aaron Gold, was talking to Diana Propp, who was his fiance. He said that at about 10 minutes into the call, which would put this at about 6:28, he heard a woman scream. He heard scuffling. He heard more screams. He looked out into the hallway, but he didn't see anything and he didn't seem to hear anything else. So he went back in and he ended his call at 6:40 p.m. Now, these times are probably approximate. You ask someone, when did you do this? When did you do that? They have some idea, but this is the best time that we have for when Catherine Woods was murdered. Now, David had left the apartment because he was going to go get his car and he was going to drive Catherine to work. He went and got his car. He pulled up in front of the apartment building, but Catherine didn't come down, and that wasn't like her. So at 6:49 p.m., he decided to head back up and check on her, and that's when he found her on the floor, covered in blood. He called 911 and reported her as having had an accident.
So we're looking at a window of about 30 minutes from 6:10 p.m. to 6:49 p.m. That's a pretty small window. I mean, it doesn't take that long to kill somebody, but this is a locked apartment building, and then the apartment doors are typically locked too. So 2 points that you have to enter through. It's just a small window of time.
Detectives look into this case. They speak with David, and I believe early on they were suspicious of him because you always look at who is close to the victim.
Who saw her last, who, you know, was the last person to see her alive.
And you can't get closer than David because he lived with her. Now, David described the situation as he had had sex with Catherine and then he left to go get the car. And then when he came back, he found her on the floor. And it's a very short window of time. So, of course, the detectives are thinking, wow, you have access to the apartment. You're close to her. Maybe something happened. Now, they figured he's cooperating because he's talking with them and he's taking him through basically the timeline.
Now, his initial call to 911, I have to say that when I listen to it, it's a little cringeworthy to me. He doesn't seem that upset. Keeps saying that he doesn't want to look at her, so he doesn't know what's happened. And I guess that's one way to hear the call is, hey, he really cared about her. So when he finds her face down in a pool of blood, he doesn't want to see that. But at the same time, is this, he doesn't want to face what he's done. That's the two ways people interpret this call.
Catherine had been murdered and the attack was particularly vicious. She had been stabbed many times. One of the stab wounds went right through one hand and through her cheek. Her throat was slashed at least twice from behind, and the cuts were so deep that her head was nearly severed from her body. A bloody boot print was on her back, and it looked as though maybe whoever had attacked her had held her down with their foot. Investigators estimated that it would have taken about 5 minutes for Catherine to die based on the wounds that she suffered. Now, to explain why they didn't find any suspects with blood, they also believe that the killer had a change of clothes.
So if we go back to the roommate, David, he lives there, he would have a change of clothes.
They tried to collect forensic evidence from the apartment. They found some hairs that appeared to be blonde in Catherine's hands. On the wall, they also found blood. But when they further analyzed it using some chemicals, they found out that there was a bloody handprint, and they were able to pull a fingerprint from it. They also found a bloody boot print on Catherine's bedspread. The boot appeared to be a size 10.5 Skechers. They pulled the surveillance camera footage from a nearby building. It was about 5 doors down from Catherine's apartment. It basically corroborated David's timeline.
The investigation begins. They're looking at phone records. They're looking at security footage. They haven't excused David, but they're definitely thinking, who else could have done this? If David's story is true, that he left and came right back, well, who's the other boyfriend?
David was asked, who do you think might have done this if it wasn't you? And he said that there was someone else that Catherine knew named Paul Vincent. Well, Paul Vincent is the first and middle name of Paul Cortez.
The phone records showed that he had made several calls to Catherine in quick succession all around 6:30 p.m. She doesn't answer. They don't connect. They interview him, and they don't like the way he comes off, and he doesn't have a good explanation of why he stopped calling abruptly. He just says, well, I just stopped calling her because she didn't answer, and I left her a few messages.
They asked him, where were you when you were calling Catherine? And he said, I was at home. But his home was 23 blocks away. When they checked cell phone records, it showed that his calls were being made from the vicinity of her apartment.
Those dang cell towers, again, that seem to get you. And, you know, if you think back to a lot of the other cases where you literally use cell phone tower data to place people, well, this is definitely put Paul in the vicinity. Now, David, it doesn't really matter because he's supposed to be there. So, of course, his cell phone records are going to show that he's making phone calls from this tower. But Paul, no, he should have been calling from a different tower.
They also have surveillance video showing Paul standing outside of her building.
Ooh, not good.
So at the time, they didn't arrest him, but he becomes the focus of the investigation.
And the reason why is because David's story seems to match up, and Paul's story does not. David said he left and came back. They got security camera footage that shows he's not lying. Whereas Paul says he's at home, and they have both cell phone tower records and security footage showing him in the vicinity. So Paul is lying.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
There was a memorial service for Catherine Woods. It was held on December 3rd, 2005, in her hometown of Columbus, Ohio. The Ohio State Marching Band that her father led played gospel songs, and two of her childhood friends performed a ballet in her memory. Her mother said that Catherine loved ballet. There was a woman in New York who came forward after seeing Paul Cortez in the news. This is, I think, an important moment in the case because the media really picked up on Paul Cortez and they started portraying him as, you know, the suspect. And so I think that's where a lot of the people in the public focused on him and said, oh, he must be the killer. Well, this woman saw him in the media and she went to the police and made a statement that she had been date raped by him in her apartment. The police held a lineup and she correctly identified Paul Cortez as her attacker. So he's arrested on December 19th on charges of sodomy. And that's when they take Paul's fingerprints because it's part of the booking process. And then they can then compare them to the one that they found in Catherine's apartment, which, well, that only solidifies him further as their chief suspect.
So we have him in the area and he says he's not. We also have a prior attack. And then we have a fingerprint that appears to match in the apartment. This is a pretty solid connection that the investigators are making against Paul.
On December 23rd, 2005, Paul Cortez was charged with second-degree murder. He was held without bail. And in April of 2006, the woman decided not to go forward with her charges. According to her, it was just too painful for her to relive to seek prosecution of Paul. But I think the other thing that might have helped here is that Paul's looking at a second-degree murder charge, and he'll be going to trial for that.
After they arrest him, they search his home, and they find a handwritten diary. I don't know why anyone would keep a handwritten diary around anymore, especially if they might have some less than scrupulous dealings in life. He talks about Hindu gods and violent impulses. He wrote about several women over the past 5 years that dumped him. He wrote, "I saved her from rape. I tried all I could to make her heal and vanquish the demons that kept her self-abusing. She thought I betrayed her when I told her father of her nighttime secret life. I wanted her to stop so that she would heal and love me without boundaries or pain." He also says something to the effect of, "She grabs the shaft that slit her throat." Now, he is in rock bands. He is a poet and a songwriter and an actor. So these things are what he will pass off as just regular poetry or journal entries.
Well, and also he had been keeping journal entries or diaries since he was a teenager. This is also the kind of evidence that normally a defense team would work very hard to keep out of a trial.
Do you think?
Let's get to this trial, Justin, because normally when there's a trial, you have the prosecution versus the defense and both come out swinging. But in this trial, his attorneys don't even show up till day four because of personal reasons.
Yeah. Right off the bat, he can probably appeal for, incompetent defense or inadequate representation, when your attorneys don't even show up, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, his attorneys had some issues, Don Florio and Laura Miranda. So they skipped the first 3 days of the trial. This is when the jury selection process was occurring. And so the judge held them in contempt of court. The prosecutor, he said that Paul killed Catherine in cold blood because, and this is a quote, because this misogynist and narcissist couldn't handle rejection. He would have known her pattern for going to work around 7 p.m. and he would have also seen that David had left to get the car. His cell phone records, as we said earlier, as well as the surveillance video, showed that Paul was right near Catherine's apartment during the time that she was killed, even though he denied being there. The bloody fingerprint, as the prosecutor said, was left there, showed that he was in the apartment at the time of the murder. And remember the boots? Well, friends remembered him owning boots very similar to the ones that would have left those boot prints.
When these friends were initially questioned, some of them don't remember what he was wearing the day of, and then later come back and say, oh yeah, he had those boots and he was wearing them. So the defense can work with that a little bit. Also, the prosecutor is working the angle that Paul and Dave did not like each other because they both had feelings for the same woman. And this is a very troubled love triangle because they didn't know about one or the other until one day they were talking on the phone because Paul had called and told David, yeah, I've been seeing Catherine for a while now. And David was caught off guard by this. So they didn't get along and they had very choice words for each other. David would say that Paul would threaten him and say, you better leave her alone. A whole litany of controlling behavior. I'm sure David had his own choice things to say back to Paul, but Catherine was allowing David to live there, not Paul. So that does say something about David.
The prosecutor also read from Cortez's journal entries. I need to say these because I think they're important for you to understand why the prosecution really believed Paul Cortez was the killer. Here they are. Beautiful Catherine, love of my life, how can I make you understand? This erotic subjection to lusty men hurts you more than you know. I just need you to quit the sex for money, life for good, as well as your ex. Then our relationship can grow for real. And he also wrote, I wanted her to stop, and this is meaning end her exotic dancing, so that she would heal and love me without boundary or pain, but she would never stop. It's like trying to stop the river's downward path in the summertime with your bare hands. No, you must wait till the winter, when nature's freeze grips that sultry flow to stillness.
Well, that first entry is beautiful love of my life. How do I make you understand that you're doing something that I disagree with and want you to stop because of my own jealousy and esteem issues? It sounds pretty controlling just on the face of it.
We told you about how the defense team wasn't even there for the first 3 days. And even when they did show up, it seemed like they weren't able to really mount a proper defense. They called in people to testify to his character, saying that they knew him. He wouldn't do something like this. He's a great guy. He's gentle. But they didn't properly attack the evidence, the forensic evidence.
Well, they claim that budget strains and whatnot, they wouldn't be able to do this. So, you know, they give lame excuses when a man's life is...
There was money allocated, though, for this very purpose.
So they're just incompetent.
Well, something happened because This is a huge issue. There's this fingerprint that it was said you could not see it with your naked eye. They literally had to put something on it to make it appear. Experts later on who looked at it would say the blood went over the fingerprint, meaning the fingerprint had already been there when the blood went over it.
Which makes sense. If he's been dating her, seeing her, he might have put his hand on the wall and then it just happened to be where the blood goes. Also, they can't find the boots that were being worn during the murder. And they said that they were 10 and a half, but he wears a size 10.
So, and what size does David wear?
I heard David wears a size 10 also. So both of them have the same size shoe, and it's not completely unbelievable that you would buy a half size too big, especially in a boot.
Paul did testify in his own defense. He said he wore the same Johnston and Murphy shoes the night of the murder that he did when he was interrogated. So in other words, I wore shoes. I didn't wear boots. He also said that much of the diaries were lyrics and exercises related to acting, and that Catherine called him just as much as he called her. This is something I spent a lot of time reading on, because it's always been said that the number of calls that Paul was making to Catherine and the number of texts that he was making were excessive. But from everything I can see and tell, it seemed as though there was some reciprocation. So it may not have been excessive. Some people text and call each other a lot. So I don't think that's a very clear indication of whether he's guilty or not, even though that's what the prosecution alleges.
Well, and there's he stopped calling right at the time of the murder. Why would you do that unless you knew that she was dead?
Well, the problem with this is, and we also have to get into the footage as well that we'll talk about later on, but essentially they're saying that he stops calling about 6:30. It's at around 7 o'clock when she's not allowed to use her phone if she's at work. You know, she's an exotic dancer. So he knows not to call her. It could fit that he just wasn't calling her because he was used to not calling her at that time, right?
The hard stop.
It's the hard stop. Now, word had it that he didn't know that Catherine was murdered, and we're talking about Paul here. He didn't know she was murdered until his mother called and told him. That's weird. That means that he went 16 hours without calling or contacting Catherine Woods. And so a lot of people point to that and say he knew she was dead, even though no one had told him yet.
Yeah, I mean, I get the stop calling at 6:30 because she goes to work, but not call her the next day, not follow up with her, not text her.
Here's my question. If he's hanging out by her apartment and he's lying and saying, oh, I'm at home, why wouldn't he be trying to follow up with her? Maybe he had some idea that they were going to get together that night, or maybe he was going to talk to her a few minutes before she went to work, but there is no follow-up, so it is very suspicious. I'll give it that.
They had video of Paul walking into an appliance store the day of, just hours before the murder. The defense truly feels like this exonerates their client, because you can see what he's wearing and you can see his shoes or his footwear as he walks into the store. So they submit this security footage into evidence. It's one of the last pieces of evidence that the jurors will see, and they can decide for themselves what kind of footwear he was wearing that day.
The jury actually reviewed a number of items from the trial. They reviewed testimony regarding David Hahn's statements about his relationship with Catherine Woods and his employment. They also looked into comparing the fingerprint evidence as testified to by experts, as well as what the prosecutor said at trial. And then they also looked into the testimony on when the murder might have taken place. And that relates to Aaron Gold's testimony. The jury deliberated for a day and a half, and this was a 3-week trial. On February 15th, 2007, what did the jury say?
They found him guilty. It wasn't easy for them. Several of the jurors were going back and forth on the fence. It really came down to two jurors who were in the not guilty camp, who didn't feel any of the evidence was that substantial until they reviewed the security footage of him walking into the appliance store, and they looked at his shoes and said, they're pretty thick. They're pretty big in the front. Those look like boots. So it's not the best or clearest video footage, but they see boots in this video. They do not see shoes. So they flip and they get a guilty verdict. Ironically, what the defense feels would exonerate their client is what got him a guilty verdict.
At the sentencing where Paul Cortez was given 25 years to life in prison, Catherine Wood's father, John, said, "We are just very relieved that the verdict came out the way it did. This is a no-win proposition for either of the families. We've lost a daughter, and now the Cortez family has problems with the son. So this is very hard on everybody." And he wanted everyone to remember Catherine as a really fine person. As with any case, Justin, there's an appeal.
Well, absolutely. I mean, his representation, his attorneys were horrid. That should be an automatic appeal just on their not showing up for the first 3 days. That just doesn't fly.
Well, let's talk about why they didn't show up. Laura Miranda faxed a letter to the judge that said she had flown to Puerto Rico because she wanted to be with her sick mother. She was fined $1,000, held in contempt of court. And the other lawyer, Don Florio, said she was at a funeral for a relative. And she was actually already under indictment because she had been charged with giving contraband, I believe drugs, to an inmate. Of course, the appeal is arguing this was a conflict of interest. Now, you said that his defense was horrible. You know, you could say that based on the lack of challenging the forensic evidence. I mean, just because you come out and say, we don't agree with what they're saying, that's not a very good defense.
I think missing jury selection's kind of important.
I mean, a lot of people might look at it as lazy, right? Where were their heads at with this? Paul, if anybody wanted to say that he had an unfair trial, I think I could understand that.
And my problem is they didn't go after David. You know, you have another suspect in this. They should have just been hammering that home the entire time. I would have said, screw my character witnesses. Get David up on the stand.
Well, you could try it, but then the judge might just come back with, he's not on trial. Or the prosecutor. Someone would say something, I'm sure. Now, his appeals are heard, and honestly, all you really need to know is that he felt he wasn't represented well and that evidence wasn't properly challenged. So he's saying, I had an incompetent defense team. Well, on January 21st, 2014, the Court of Appeals reviewed all of this and decided they were going to uphold his conviction. They did agree with him that he had brought up some substantial issues, such as the prosecutor using his journal entries against him. They also said, though, that the fingerprint evidence couldn't properly be challenged now because it went through that first trial, right? It went through the trial and wasn't properly challenged. So it's basically truth.
It goes in.
It's in. It's already locked in. So there's no way to fight that. Now, he has since gotten another attorney, Tony Marie Angeli. And she has really done a good job, I think, of looking into ways to challenge this case. I don't know if she's ever going to be successful because so far she really hasn't been, but I don't see it as her fault. She's doing the best she can now.
With what she's been handed, this is sort of a day late, dollar short in the justice system. Once you lose an appeal, you're behind now.
They have video, surveillance video with timestamps that shows David leaving the apartment by the time that Catherine was murdered. This is footage that would show people, hey, maybe he's the killer. Now, of course, the prosecutor says this is ridiculous, that there's no way to use the timestamp. It doesn't prove anything, that the timestamp could be wrong.
Or we know she was murdered at around this time, but when it comes down to mere minutes, you can't say 5 or 10 minutes in one way or the other. It's just such a short time frame that between David and Paul, if they're both in this building at the same time, it's really hard for me to decide if David had left the building before or after that scream.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
Also, another thing they didn't bring up was this hair found in Catherine's hand. I know that hair matching is a little bit of a pseudoscience, but well, you just look at it under a microscope and then you can at least decide whether it's synthetic or human or synthetic or natural. It was blonde, and Paul has brown hair.
David has blonde hair. Many people have said, you know, when you read about this case and people are debating it, many people say that those weren't even human hairs. Some say they were fibers, some say they were dog hair.
So in other words, it's kind of inconclusive on whether or not these hairs have anything to do with this murder.
Well, if they're found on her hand, a lot of people would say that means something. And if these hairs are Caucasian, then they would more point to David than Paul. There was hair analysis done on these hairs, on these blonde hairs. It showed that the hair fragments had Caucasoid characteristics, meaning Caucasian, and there were also dark-colored animal hairs. There is also a question of the dog. Was the dog let out? And if that's the case, someone would have to be able to handle that dog, and some people point to David and say, well, he could easily lead the dog out of the area because you can't have a dog in the room with you if you're going to commit a murder.
I think it's easily explained that you could close the door to the room with the dog outside. But again, you're having to manage multiple things. David had taken the dog out, then Paul wouldn't have had to deal with it.
So Paul's lawyer said that they have this footage showing that David left the apartment after the time of the murder. And I know the time is a little wishy-washy. It's somewhere between 6:20 and 6:33, something like that. But this is footage that shows him leaving just minutes later. And the prosecutor said that doesn't mean anything because the timestamp could have been faked. We don't really know when the murder occurred. It doesn't mean anything. But the lawyer said it does matter because there is testimony from Michael Riley, who is a custodian, who said that that security camera was connected to the internet and the time was continuously updated, just like your computer and just like your phone.
So that puts David walking out after the time the neighbor upstairs says he heard a scream.
Yeah, it's within minutes.
Not looking good for David if he didn't leave before this.
At this point, Paul, you know, his appeals aren't working. He doesn't look like he's getting out. But when you look at this case and you think about two men both having motives to murder this woman, I mean, it's pretty clear. You can say the journal entries are just him being creative, whatever, but there are journal entries that are very specific, it seems, to Catherine. And then you have this other ex-boyfriend named David Hahn, who was in danger of being kicked out again, I'm sure.
It might have been her saying, leave, kick him out. Might have been, I'm in love with you, and now you're with this other man. He does have almost as much motive as Paul does.
Another thing that I had read, and when we're talking about how David may have been lying as well, he had said that he had sex with Catherine. It seemed as though he wasn't really romantically involved with her at the time. They were roommates, but not romantically involved. And of course, this is difficult to prove, but I also heard that they, you know, during the autopsy, checked Catherine to see if she had recently had sex or had suffered a sexual assault, and there was no evidence.
I don't know why he would lie about that, because that actually makes him look worse. that ties him closer to her.
I would say another reason why both of these men make great suspects is because they were both, I guess you could say, jilted lovers. They both wanted to be with Catherine, and you know, she hadn't really settled on either one of them and had broken up with both of them. I think what really sways the prosecutor as well as the detectives against Paul is the fact that it was David who was planning to take Catherine to work, and he had been living with her. So it looks like everything's on the up and up there. Like, why would he suddenly turn on her and murder her? It just doesn't seem to make sense. But then again, this security footage showing him leaving not too long after the scuffle and screams. I mean, I think you could look at either of these men and you could build a case for them being the murderer. And really, for me, one of the things that I was reading about that gives me a lot of pause is that the apartment building is locked. So I know, you know, Justin, you and I were talking about this and you're like, well, someone can walk out and then you can put your hand in there, or your foot in there and just kind of sneak in. And that makes sense. But if you see when David's leaving and you think about when she was murdered, it just seems like with him coming and going, there's not a lot of time for someone else to go in there and murder Catherine. I'm not saying David did it. I'm just saying I feel like there should have been more pause here because it feels like there are two strong suspects.
My explanation to this is Paul was already inside the building when David left and was waiting down the hallway. David walked out of the apartment, but not even left the building. So Paul was literally right there to go into the apartment. So not even the entrance to the building, but already accessed the building and then literally pushes his way into the apartment where Catherine's at.
But how do you explain that David is leaving to go get the car and she may already be dead?
This is the time constraint we have, and we have to go with either he left and then she's immediately screaming, so it's so close that maybe people are getting the times wrong. Like the neighbor upstairs says it was 10 minutes in. Maybe it wasn't 10 minutes in. Maybe it was 15 minutes in. You know, there's a little bit of a variable there.
Well, even with the variable, it just, it's such a tight amount of time. I've had trouble making up my mind on this one. I don't honestly know who I would point at as being the more likely killer. I mean, I would like to know if anybody else has looked into this and what they think is the smoking gun, as it were, or at least the most persuasive evidence, because they can't tie a murder weapon to anybody, right? There's nothing like that. All they have is they have this fingerprint, which might have been a latent print where blood went over it. And then they have Paul lying about where he was at the time.
I side or lean more towards Paul for the simple fact that if this is all happening in such a short time frame, does David have enough time to get to leave the apartment building and then come back, change his clothes, all that? David didn't have any defensive wounds or any wounds on him. So I know it doesn't take that long to change your clothes, but he would have to have cleaned up and changed his clothes before he called 911.
But David lived there. He had access to his own clothes and a shower.
Well, luminol is an amazing thing. And there's no record of them finding blood anywhere else except for where the murder happened.
I think it's difficult to sort out some of these issues because the defense didn't really challenge them the way they were supposed to. You need to bring in experts to review the allegations by the prosecutor, and they didn't do that. So I feel like it wasn't a fair trial. I'm not saying Paul didn't do it, but I feel like based on how his lawyers handled the trial and how the prosecutor did a very good job of steering everything towards Paul, I don't see how the jury was supposed to find it otherwise.
And I don't understand how the appeals court didn't think this rose to the threshold of getting a retrial. I mean, that's insane to me. But wow, I mean, we have other people that are appealing on just really minor technicalities and getting granted retrials. And when your lawyers don't show up, wow, that doesn't rise to the threshold.
No, because not challenging some of this evidence, they would see it as a strategy mistake, you know, bad strategy. We've talked about that before. And so Paul's left with the mess that his case is. The only thing even worse about this is if Paul wasn't the murderer and it was someone else, he's in prison for at least 25 years. And he's being blamed for the murder of someone that he loved very much. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries, and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.